WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Now that President Bush has ordered American bombers to within striking distance of Afghanistan, we're trying to learn more about that part of the world. Pakistan, which borders Afghanistan, has agreed to help the United States, but the president of Pakistan faces opposition within his country. My guest journalist and author Richard Reeves lived in Pakistan in 1983, when Afghanistan was at war with the Soviets who had invaded the country. He's continued to visit Pakistan every few years. Reeves is best known for his books about American presidents. He has a new one called President Nixon, Alone in the White House, based on recently declassified tapes and papers from the Nixon White House. In 1983, you moved to Islamabad with your wife. She was reporting on conditions in the camps housing refugees from the war across the border in Afghanistan. And a couple of years after that, you wrote a book called Passage to Peshawar. What was our relationship with Pakistan when you were there in 1983?
Yes, my wife went there to work in the refugee camps and later founded an organization called the Women's Commission for women and children refugees, because she realized that women in these countries had no power whatever, and she wanted to try to create a structure where they could sometimes get together without men being there. It was that was pretty exciting stuff, but we were driven out by posters targeting my wife as the whore of the West, who was doing this to our women. They did not want both the Pakistanis and much more the Afghanis. The Afghans don't want women educated in general, and that's why they went to the hills against the Soviets, and that's when we were there, and that's why they have gone to the hills, as it were, against us. The country was very similar then. This is, I mean, for people who don't know, Pakistan is a Muslim country, a Muslim republic, which was thrown together after the partition in India, 1947. It's the eighth largest country in the world. There are 150 million people there, totally Islamic, and it has a military government now as it did then. I've known the last four leaders of Pakistan, and the military is the only thing that functions well in the country. Roads and trucks. It's built on the old British colonial system. That is, who you work for, what you are, determines your entire life. If you're in the military, you live on military bases, your children go to military schools. When you retire, the military gives you property. It has trucks, it has roads, it has airplanes. It can function, it has communications. It can function somewhat in the modern world. Much of the country is not in the modern world. It's not in the 18th century, much less in the 21st century. And there is a constant battle there between religion and modernism, which we now see is spreading across the world. And the trick to being Musharraf, the current general running it, Zia-ul-Huq was running it when I was there, play this very difficult, they're very sophisticated men who play this very difficult role, as you see Musharraf doing every day today. He has to be with the United States. The country cannot function without the United States. It's been something of a client state of ours now since the Cold War. Gary Francis Powers on the U-2 took off from a secret base in Peshawar. So he has to keep us happy, but at the same time, the Muslim fundamentalism that we're seeing in the world, people like Osama bin Laden, what they are rebelling against is American presence, basically. Bin Laden formed his organization when American troops went into Saudi Arabia to help preserve the royal family. So that what they have been doing over this time is trying to export their fundamentalism, first to Afghanistan and now to the United States and other parts of the world, because each day is a battle, whether you're a military ruler or the king of Saudi Arabia or the king of Jordan, against the fundamentalists who would like to take the country over in the way the Ayatollahs took over Iran and turn it into a true Islamic state.
What are the difficulties of the position we're putting the Pakistan government in now by asking them to side with us in the coalition to end terrorism and to try to get Osama bin Laden?
The Pakistani leadership, which is now military, although I must say, in these kind of military governments, the civil service, the bureaucracy and whatnot, doesn't really change. They're professionals, often of great skill, and they run the country, the economy, the diplomacy. The maximum leader, in this case, General Musharraf, is in a position where his country cannot survive without the United States, and it cannot survive if fundamentalist Muslims turn on it. So this is a man on a tightrope, ever ready to be knocked off, either because we're unhappy or because the fundamentalists gain enough strength. So he's got to try to play our game and their game at the same time. And they're not the only country in the world. I mean, Jacques Chirac is here in America right now talking about how he's supporting the Americans. But back home, the prime minister, Jospin, is telling people, my job is to protect the French people, which really means we are not going to cooperate with the Americans. We're not going to let American planes fly over France. We're not going to give the Americans bases and troops to fight against or attack or retaliate against Muslims, because after all, we are a country that, I don't know what France is now, but it's probably a quarter Muslim, more, and most of it's young people. This is the great challenge of the man in the White House now, is to understand what the real agendas of a country, whether it's Pakistan or France, is, and work out a way that they can do what we want while the other side isn't quite sure they're doing that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Richard Reeves. He's written extensively about Pakistan. His new book is about President Nixon. It's one of several presidents that Richard Reeves has written about. You were saying to me before we started our interview that we have to keep in mind that our allies are really allies only on certain issues. Apply that to Pakistan. And in what areas are they our ally? In what areas are their interests different from ours?
Well, they are our ally primarily because it is our strength and to a certain extent China's strength, which allows them, they feel, to survive against the strength of India, which is the dominant power by far on the in South Asia. India is the United States, and Pakistan is Canada. And they every day, and both of them have developed nuclear weapons. And who are those nuclear weapons to use against? They're to use against each other. So they need the United States to keep their military modern, to give them enough money to get them modern communication equipment, et cetera. On the other hand, they need Afghanistan. They and we created this monster called the Taliban. And if without strong United States presence, one of the Taliban options is simply, and they are militarily ready, is simply to move into the north of Pakistan and create a larger, very similar to Kosovo and Serbia, to create a larger Afghanistan at the expense of a smaller Pakistan.
When you say that the United States and Pakistan created the Taliban, what do you mean? We've heard a lot about how America funded and armed the Mujahideen in its fight against the Soviet Union, but what's the connection between the United States, Pakistan, and the Taliban?
After the Mujahideen defeated the Soviets, and they defeated them because the United States basically gave them Stinger missiles. It was exactly the same as Vietnam. With Stinger heat-seeking missiles, suddenly the Mujahideen could bring down Russian planes and helicopters. The Russians did the same thing we did. They no longer flew close to the ground. They bombed from on high, and what they hit, no one knows, and eventually they were defeated in that war. The Mujahideen immediately broke into a vicious, many-faceted civil war, and the country spun out of control and became a great threat to all its neighbors, including Iran, but especially Pakistan. And at that point, the United States and Pakistan got together to create an organization which was trained in the Northwest frontier. And it was religious training, but they were being trained militarily to invade Afghanistan. They were mostly Afghanis, but there were many Pakistanis and Saudis among them. And eventually they did get themselves together with equipment paid for by America, invaded their own country, Afghanistan, and liberated it, if you want to use that word, and right now control 90% of the country. There was a man named Ahmed Massoud, who controlled the very north of Afghanistan, who died in a suicide bombing 2 weeks ago, which was obviously linked to the terrorism that we now have here. This is an old American tactic, which has not always served us so well. When we could not control al-Fatah in the Middle East, we got together with the Israelis to create a new rival organization to eliminate Yasser Arafat's organization. This is 25 years ago. That organization was called Hamas, and it became a monster, too. We're not too good at this, it turns out.
Well, what are some of the lessons you think we should have learned from the past as we face this fight against terrorism?
The lesson from the past is the Crusades and learning what these countries are really about. One of my criticisms of Bush was his use of the word crusade to talk about this. The word crusade means a great deal more in that part of the world than it does here. Crusade is just a word here. Their history is continuous, and the fight that is going on now between Muslim fundamentalists and us has to do with a lot of things. It is it has to do with modernizers versus traditionalists, but it also has to do, because these fundamentalists wouldn't control a modern country. They couldn't control a modern country. But it also has to do with the fact that in their minds, this is a Christian-Muslim continuation of the Crusades. So that for an American president to throw out the word crusade in that part of the world is like a match in a field of oil.
At the end of your book, Passage to Peshawar, you wrote, "I came back from Pakistan thinking that if the United States does fail this time in Pakistan, if we lose Pakistan, it will not be because American ideas and ideals were not worthy, but because we didn't seem to think that illiterate masses were worthy of sharing them. Without those ideas, what were we out there? Just more people with guns." Can you talk a little bit more about this revelation that you have at the end of the book?
I haven't obviously read or seen or heard those words in almost 20 years. But what I meant by them was that, and I'll speak just for Pakistan, but it's true in other parts of the world too, for our own global strategic reasons, and this was during the Cold War, we supported military governments and monarchies, medieval monarchies like Saudi Arabia, hard military governments like Pakistan and other places, because it suited our Cold War purposes. And educating the masses, feeding them, they're called the masses in Southeast Asia, would not be helpful in that, because if the people of Pakistan were educated, they would overthrow the military government. And at that time, we would have considered that a great Cold War loss. And in other countries, an educated populace, educated women, men with engineering educations, a restless rising middle class would overthrow these vestiges of centuries past. And it wasn't in our interest that that happened.
My guest is journalist and author Richard Reeves. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Richard Reeves. He has a new book called President Nixon, Alone in the White House. We're talking about Pakistan, which is the subject of one of his earlier books. Now, you were telling me that you have some friends who were imprisoned in Pakistan and are now living in the United States. When and why were they imprisoned?
Well, they were imprisoned or under house arrest because their side lost. In the latest, the Prime Minister of Pakistan We go from Zia al-Haq to Benazir Bhutto to Nawaz Sharif, now to General Musharraf. Each time there is a turnover like that, there are a certain number of people who have rolled the dice with the regime in power. One of the great stories in this country, the United States, almost without exception, elites in other countries now have either relatives or homes in the United States, which they are ready to, the Washington suburbs are filled with them. Los Angeles is filled with them. If you go to Miami at night, you'll see very few lights on in those great towers because, in fact, they're owned by the first families of Latin America who will run to Miami if their governments are overthrown. That's the new modern. That's part of the globalization of life today. Everybody has an escape hatch, and it's usually to the United States. Everybody who is educated, we are the kind of escape of last resort for millions of people.
I'd like to know what you're thinking emotionally. You must be very attached to Pakistan and that part of the world. You've lived there. You keep returning there. What are some of the things going through your mind? What are some of the emotional conflicts you may be feeling now, looking ahead?
It's not an emotional conflict. It is a sadness and a depression that they will never get it together. These wonderful people. They have been unable to escape the Middle Ages, and that includes my friends who are great landowners in these countries. They won't give up their land, we see this all over the world. The wealth in these places is the land, and for a few people, education in the West. And they simply will not give up a system. I've forgotten the numbers now, but 90% of the wealth of Pakistan is owned by 20 families. I have that number slightly wrong. And they have been unwilling to do what our founding fathers did. And the price they're going to pay for it is someday there will be no Pakistan.
From the time that you lived in Pakistan, what are some of the things that you learned that you haven't yet shared with us about why so many people in that part of the world really hate the United States?
People hate the United States because we are very revolutionary people in our own way. So to a certain extent, we're the Russians. And the best example is when we come in and take over, we want to educate women. Almost all these societies function with women as fifth-class citizens, and the religious leaders particularly, and village leaders, don't like that thing. But to boil that down, this is America's problem, I think. In Pakistan and in many other parts of the world, we are running the world. We are the most powerful empire in the history of the world. We think well. But other empires, whether the Romans, the British, the Turks, did not expect the people whose lives they were transforming, often negatively in their view, to love them. We expect to run the world, tell the world what to do about free market economies, about elections, about what kind of vegetables you can grow, what Monsanto wants, what the drug companies are willing to sell. We want the world run that way. We're going to tell them exactly what to do. And we expect them to like it. We expect them to love us. And they don't. They admire us. They'd like to have what we have, but they don't want to be us, and they don't want to be told by us what to do. So there's always a great deal of resentment out there by many, many people. And if I can just say one thing about my own business, I mean, the press, my business, has failed this country terribly by withdrawing from foreign coverage. Americans don't know this. I mean, you couldn't find out what the Taliban was by watching the nightly news in this country for years. We've withdrawn our foreign correspondents, and now all we cover is our own health and welfare. And we have, despite all our power and education, become quite ignorant about a lot of things in the world.
This reminds me of something that a refugee commissioner told you in 1983 when you were in Pakistan. He said, "It's all very far away for you in America, isn't it? But it's not as far as you think."
That's exactly right. I had totally forgotten that, right? I was sitting in with them. They all had their little Kalashnikovs on their lap. And Abdul was his name, was it?
I don't remember.
I think he was Commissioner Abdul. He was the commissioner of the Northwest Frontier Province when I met him. He was a tough guy. I wonder what happened to him. But yes, that's what he said, and he was right.
Richard Reeves, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much, sir. It was a great pleasure.
Richard Reeves is the author of many books, including Passage to Peshawar. His new book is called President Nixon, Alone in the White House. Our interview was recorded earlier today. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.